Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson. And if you're one of our Patreon supporters, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. And thank you to patrons, including this week, Jack Weeks, Tom Young, Richard Taylor, Matthew Riley, who are among the many supporting us directly, getting access to our full-length ad-free show and our Patreon-exclusive weekly sister show, Extra Message. And they got started, as you can, by going to patreon.com/UK Tech. Thank you, patrons. Now, Ian isn't here this week because he heard Anne Robinson was down to be a secret guest performer at an unofficial Weakest Link reunion, so he's currently racing down to the Scarborough Laughter Factory in his Robin Reliant as we speak. But instead, joining us this week is CNET.com's Andy Hoyle.
Hi there. Lovely to step in.
It's nice to be stepped into, so to speak. I know we're not on video right now, but I couldn't help notice earlier on that your lockdown beard is looking like, and I mean this with plenty of brotherly love, like a cross between a bird's nest and the remnants of a bonfire.
Well, thank you very much. Okay. That is exactly what I wanted to hear. It's been trimmed back. The hair is growing longer and longer, but the beard I am... keeping under control, shall we say.
I see, good. Well, I cut my own hair yesterday with kitchen scissors without using a mirror, so that was an adventure.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the results of that.
Yes, well, with that little tangent into personal hygiene aside, let's talk about some news. And I'm afraid we must start with a sad topic, because we have to mourn the death of one of the biggest influences on my childhood, certainly Andy's childhood as well, and the formative years of so many Brits. The Argos catalogue has died. It was just 48 years old. Actually, 48. I'm amazed it was that old, Andy, the Argos catalogue.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that old, does it? Like 50. No. for a high street shopping bible. That's pretty good.
Yeah, well, for those of you who do not know what the Argos shopping catalogue is, obviously, for those of you who do know what it is, it needs no introduction. But for those that didn't, let me summarise with a few simple facts. This was the British high street equivalent to Amazon printing a magazine every 6 months that lists every single product it sells. And at its peak, it was the most widely printed publication in the whole of Europe, and only the Bible was in more UK homes than the Argos catalogue. More than a billion copies were produced over that 48-year run. But the company said that this laminated book of dreams, as the BBC noted this week, was how comedian Bill Bailey jokingly referred to it, will no longer be printed from January. Argos said the online shopping equivalent, which is to say online shopping in general, offers greater convenience than flicking through its print catalogue, and so no further take-home editions of the catalogue will be produced. Instead, it's only going to have products listed on its website, and you can browse that in stores as well and on the app. So the version that's out now, which was printed in January of this year, I believe, will actually be the final version. Now,
We didn't even get like a special edition last copy with like a gilded front that we could have gone and got the final one.
It's sadly, yeah, it is a shame.
What I would have loved if they did a final edition that contained lots of pages pulled directly from previous editions, so as you're flicking through, we can flick through the PDAs and the calculators that we used to pore over back in like 1995.
Well, you say that, but actually, they've sort of done something close to it. If you go to a website, which is dev, as in D-E-V, .argosbookofdreams.co.uk, they have scanned every edition of the Argos catalogue, and it's up online.
Here I am. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Now, I was looking at this because when I was doing the research for this, I needed to find a reference. And I thought I was going to be able to just pirate some old PDFs or something. But it turns out that was not even necessary because every version is available. Now, it's not a very compelling interface for browsing it, but it does work and it is every issue and they are scanned in full color.
This is amazing.
Yeah, so I was browsing through some of the 90s ones. Now, just before we dive into a little bit of reminiscing about the Argos catalogue, customers shopping on smartphones and tablets now apparently count for 70% of all of Argos's online sales. Again, this is according to the BBC still. And the stores will be fine because people will still use them as glorified pickup locations, or they'll just go in and browse the web-based catalogue or on their app in those shops. So that actual in-store experience isn't going to change. It's really just a sign of the times that the printed catalogue, of which about 3 million or so are printed every 6 months for Argos, will just be no more, which hopefully goes to some reason to explain why we thought this was a tech story, because there are really two reasons. One is that the catalogue is being killed because of tech, and I think a lot of people who aren't familiar with what Argos is and has been for so long are just interested in hearing that it's basically a printed version of Amazon. But also, interestingly, more I think to you and I to talk about is that this was nerd nirvana back in the day, because they're free. You could literally, I mean, I remember you and I going down to the Argos the morning that the new catalogue was out in order to go and pick one up, come back, watch Red Dwarf episodes and browse the Watchers and other tech in the Argos catalogue.
It was absolutely the thing that we got and just poured over all the gadgets and even things that weren't really gadgets. You know, like I mentioned calculators earlier, but that was absolutely the thing we used to love looking at. And I'm just... there was no editorializing. This wasn't a magazine. So I've just got the 1990/2000 issue, and there's the PlayStation 1 in there, the original one, and its listing is just includes PlayStation console, one DualShock analog controller. That's it. So it's not like you get all this information, but you just look at these things and you see what's available. And it was incredible to pore over. And we always made a point of getting like a couple of copies when the new one was out and would basically read them cover to cover, or at least the sections that were relevant.
Yeah. One each, which if memory serves, the only other time that you and I did that was when Harry Potter came out, and it wasn't a case of buying one for the house and we'd share. It was, no, we're going to have to buy one each because otherwise we're not going to be able to read them together. The only other equivalent was the Argos catalogue. And like you, I looked up some old issues and I picked out... it's funny that you picked out some of the old calculators and stuff, because that was definitely where I got my almost erotic love of Scions from, because yes, Argos always listed the Scion palm tops, and indeed even some of the pre-Scion ones. I found one listing in the 1992 edition of the Argos catalogue, which was a Sharp IQ8000, which was advertised as having a QWERTY keyboard, a 199-year calendar, which was a pretty ambitious lifespan estimation by the 90s standards. It had a world clock, it had a telephone number directory, and according to this 1992 edition, it also had a feature simply described as secret function. No explanation further than that. But all that was yours for £200, which in today's money is about £500,000, I believe.
I've just had a mini disc for mini disc players.
Classic era.
Remember, I found the one that Sony one that you accidentally threw down a mountain.
Which survived, I hasten to point out. Yeah,
I remember this Iwer cassette player. I loved that cassette player. Oh my, this is absolutely, this is the best thing that you have ever sent me a link to. Why have you not told me about this before? I am
because
furious.
I only found it last night when I was putting some of the early parts of this show together.
Many hours have passed that I could have been poring over. Oh my god, this is incredible.
Yeah, we're looking at it. So the link to this this is in the MP3 description and at uktechshow.com. Look for episode 215 and you'll find a link in there. But it's dev.argosbookofdreams.co.uk. I have to say, it doesn't work super well on mobile, but it is...
it doesn't work super well at all, to be honest, but it does work. Handheld TV players. I used to really want one of those. I'll be honest, I haven't been listening to a thing you have said for most of this show because I've just been been absorbed in this. I just wanted to say that I think I'm still amazed that it has taken this long to die. Like, for a long time I have not seen the point in them printing so many copies of this, particularly when, you know, we're trying not to just waste paper and stuff. Like, what is being the point? Everyone's got a phone, everyone's got a computer. Shopping online just is like, should have killed this printed edition at least 5 years ago. I'm amazed it's made it to 2020.
If this, you know, at its peak, if only the Bible was a publication in more British homes than the Argos catalogue, that is just an, if nothing else, it's pure marketing. Because any time you think, I need some new bed sheets, I need a new set of weights, I need a game for a present for a 5-year-old, I need a new Scion, I need to tear out a page of underwear models and go to the bathroom because I'm 15 or whatever. Like, the Argos catalogue was always the first port of call for all those things, closely followed by Littlewoods and Avon, depending on exactly how quickly you wanted something to be delivered.
Ooh, pages, page 482. Let's go to page 482. This is so exciting.
Why are you going to page 482? What's on that?
Pages.
Pages, P-A-G-E-R-S. Yeah, see if they have the Motorola one with the translucent green casing, because that was the one
had that one, didn't you?
Well, no, it's the one
they
I
do.
Wanted.
Yeah, it's number 7, and it is... Oh, this is the page 1 vision text pager. That's the clear plastic.
Classic.
One.
Classic. Yeah. This is, I mean, for those of you who are completely baffled as to why this is so exciting, hopefully this goes to some way of explaining why it is so significant that this catalogue is being killed and has been killed, murdered, nay, taken around the back of the shopping equivalent of an old shed, which ironically are available in Argos, and being shot through the head with a double-barreled rifle, which I should point out are not available in Argos. We simply must move on. We simply must.
But we can move on the basis that every so often I'm going to shout out with something else fun that I've seen in the old Argos catalogue. Because I'm at printers right now, and oh my God, all the PDAs, Nate, all the electronic organisers. Here we go. Here's where your Scions will be. Yep. I know, it's Oregon Scientific one, but it's basically...
Fakers.
And that, the Oregon Scientific one, the first touchscreen one I had. Oh, I loved that one. That was amazing. Scion organisers, yep. The Scion Palm Top, they haven't got it specifically listed. Oh, yeah, they have 10. Number 10, the Scion 3MX.
That was the one I had.
Guess how much it was?
It was, wasn't it £250?
Close, £199.
It's not that close.
Well, I mean, it's within 200. Whereas the 5MX with 16 megabytes of storage was £429. I mean, that is a lot of money then. That's what would that be now? Like
a million pounds.
Yeah, probably a million pounds.
Do me a favor and screenshot some of these that we're talking about, because I am going to put some of the screenshots of the items we've been talking about on the blog at uktechshow.com. Look for episode 215. You'll find the link to this website there. You'll also find, as I say, just then, a few moments ago, where you'll find the screenshots to some of these items. And let us know what your favorite Argos related memory was. What was your first product? What was your favorite digital watch? Mine was always the Casio one that could control TVs with infrared. And you can send any memories you have to uktechshow@icloud.com. Sainsbury's supermarket has begun testing a virtual queuing system that will allow customers to wait remotely for their turn to shop in its stores. This is according to a BBC write-up this week. Shoppers will be able to join the queue from a remote location, such as their car, using a smartphone app, avoiding the need to stand outside the shop with their trolleys 2 meters apart from their fellow shoppers, all wondering why oh why they didn't just order their bread, vodka and condoms online. But it did say the trial has begun at 5 UK stores. It's going to run until the middle of this month. And experts say that retailers need to find new ways of alleviating queuing as we head into autumn and winter. And this, I mean, I presume this is basically to help with this sort of one in, one out policy that a lot of shops have right now. But But it reminds me a little bit of a couple of things. One, that the people who queue at Apple stores on behalf of other people.
No, I don't think. I think what it reminds me of is the system that Starbucks has, where you just pre-order your coffee via the app, and then it's sort of ready for you when you get there. So rather than going in and having to wait in line and then make the order and then wait for it to be done, you sort of say in advance, "I want this," and then it's there. And you know, in post-COVID shopping, I know that you've got those words that aren't being mentioned on your show, but this is an extremely good solution. Still, the supermarkets have got queues going out the door at busy times, and you know, right around the supermarket, instead of having to stand in line for an hour or more trying to wait your turn to go in and shop, you can just basically check in at home and then go when it's sort of your allotted time to go and do it, which I think is just a great system of something that we're going to have to do. Like we still have to go to the supermarket, have to go into these stores and do things. This is just going to be a really is a good use of technology, frankly, to make it a much more palatable solution. Frankly, yes, you know, I think ordering online, and if you can either have deliveries or, as I've been doing, the click and collect thing where you just pull up and they dump the bags in your boot and off you pop. But I think this is a really good solution. I think it's the sort of thing we're going to see in a lot more shops, and also and probably in just any sort of sites of interest as well, where people would otherwise be queuing, and you'd see lots of people inside.
And it's hardly unprecedented if you think about it, because it's similar to that idea of walking into thing, and you take a ticket, take a number, and when your number's called, you just waddle up to the front and say,
yeah,
you know, excuse me, what's this? I don't know, lump on my testicles, and someone will have a look at that.
You're doing that in like Morrison's, yeah, when you take a ticket for the
deli
counter.
No, I never did that. No, I didn't do that in Morrison's. No, I did that in a place in Soho many years ago, but it's the same idea where you're.
Yeah. It isn't new technology, but it's been put into very sensible use in a time when we need sensible use of technology to help these kinds of things. Because it means that you can go to the shop. You don't need to see. It doesn't matter if you're going at a particularly busy time. You can sort of book your slot, as it were, and that's when you're allowed to go. When you're allowed to go shopping, it keeps everyone safer. It keeps the staff safer. It means you don't have queues extending for ages, and you don't sort of make the journey to go out and go shopping only to find that it's busier than you thought and you've got to stand outside queuing for 45 minutes. I think this is a superb solution, and one of many that we are going to find will become, well, everyone's saying, you know, I don't like the new normal, but it is the new normal. This is what we're going to have now. This is how shopping is going to be. And I actually think it's something that I think is going to make things much easier to deal with. I think it's a good solution, COVID or not.
I remember a few minutes ago mentioning Apple. You may also remember, if your memory goes back that far, Andy, which I believe it does. It made me think that we do have a new iPhone launching later this year, albeit potentially a little delayed, as we learned this week on Apple's earnings calls. But Apple stores are famous for its gigantic queues on launch days. It will be interesting to see if that is affected by it that shall not be named this year, because they use those launch events and those long queues as publicity. You know, I've had emails over the years from people in Apple's public relations department saying, "Have you seen how long the queue is outside insert store name here?" And the answer is always yes, usually, and that's as far as it goes. But it is
well, I've
it
had
is
to all... go and cover them. I've for the most of the last major launches, I've gone ahead of opening to be at the store, and usually worked with Apple, so I'm inside getting the photos as the first customer gets their phone and stuff, which is it's a shame that it qualifies as news, but it does. People really do care; they want to see it, and it's interesting. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how that happens this year, because I mean, if we're talking by September, it's potentially going to just be that, yes, there will be a queue, but everyone's just 6 feet apart. And in which case, how long is that queue going to have to be? I think more likely just that fewer people are going to be wanting to actually queue up in person. I suspect there will be this similar sort of technology where you sort of book your place online, but then if you're doing that, then surely you just buy it online. I think it's going to be interesting then.
Well, one last thing. We did get excited about Sainsbury's last year when it did another interesting little experiment with digital shopping or modern shopping, when it said it was opening a store in London that had no checkouts. And we actually did a special feature about it at the time on the show. It was big news for us. But then a few months later, we also had to discuss the fact that it was installing checkouts at this checkout-free store and admitting people weren't really ready for such a Blade Runner-esque method of futuristic shopping.
No. It's not people are not ready, the technology is not ready. If you can make self-service checkouts not incredibly annoying, then fine. Otherwise, you need a person to staff it.
That's a fair point.
The technology is at fault, not the people here.
Mm.
And I don't often say it that way around.
No, very true. Well, if you are that way around, if you are the problem, not the solution, if you are the solution, not the problem, either way, you can send us a relevant email to uktechshow@icloud.com where we will digest and opine on your comments. Andy at CNET wrote an article this week, and the headline was very provocative. It was, "This iPhone accessory might be the biggest revolution in phone photography ever." And the subtitle to this was, "Prepare to be amazed by the difference a flash can make." Now, Andy, aside from being a tech journalist, is also very much a photojournalist and professional photographer and does a lot of digital photography videos and streams and stuff. And so I thought, what an opportunity this is, having you on the show, to talk about your almost hyperbolic joy at something you've used in the flashing world.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us all about this? What is this product?
Well, this is a professional flash. So the same sort of flash that pro photographers would use, you know, in studio photography for fashion portraits or products. I use them all the time, but they have always been for the realms of pros with proper DSLRs, with triggers that can communicate with these flashes. It's never been something that you can really use with an iPhone. But this is a company, Profoto, which is the biggest and arguably the best name in the industry for these sorts of products, has developed the light is the same light that they already sell, but they've added the functionality of it being able to talk to your iPhone. And so you can use professional flash strobe, as they're called, with professional lighting modifiers, your softboxes, your umbrellas, whatever, with your iPhone. And that is the thing which... So I wrote the headline of the biggest revolution in phone photography ever, and I stand by that because since phones have had cameras, we've seen increases in resolution, and more recently we've seen bigger pushes to take better photos in low light. But we have never been able to... The flash in the back of the phone has always been poor, terrible. It's not a real flash. You can't do things with it, really. This is the first time we've properly seen a phone be able to use professional light, and that can completely change how you take photos. I've been able to take photos with my phone now that I just would never have been able to do before. It would have been physically impossible. It changes the phone from being just good for some quick snaps when you're out and about into being a legitimate tool that you could use professionally, that commercial photographers could use should they want to. We've never been able to do this before. It's very, very exciting. The flip side, of course, is, well, what is the point? And that is a good argument, because of course if you are a pro photographer, why would you want to take photos on your phone? Particularly because I will say this light does cost about £1,500.
Wow.
So yeah, this is not cheap, but I would make a couple of arguments. Is that one, A lot of pro photographers may already have this flash, so they're not buying it specifically for their phone. This is some, but now they can use it with their phone, which means that it's very easy for them to take test shots with their phone, share them immediately with clients, do things that they can quickly share on social media in a way that they simply cannot do when they're using their full equipment, where maybe their cameras are tethered to computers, the photos have to go through image processing before they get shared online. This allows for instant live sharing in basically in real time. But also, this light is very, very small. It's battery powered, and so you can take it on location.
How big is it? Very roughly. I mean, are we talking, you know, palm sized or
the size of a shoe? You would need a backpack. You wouldn't put it in your pocket. But you can very easily just head out into the hills with just your phone and this flash and maybe a model if you're taking photos of someone, and get pro level photos with just your phone, not having to also haul your full size camera and a big professional lens. You can get shots with just your phone now. It is not an accessory for everyone, but it is the thing which has allowed you to take the most professional photos on a phone ever.
So let me ask you a couple of questions then. The first being, one of the limitations of certainly the iPhone camera, but really all modern smartphone cameras, is that the image processing is very good, but the sensors are very, very small. And so low light is much more, or rather has a much more noticeable degrading effect on images than low light does on a larger camera.
Yeah.
So is part of the argument here that simply throwing more light at an object is going to help the iPhone or any phone do what it can do but can't do without a little extra help?
Yes and no. I mean, the problem is that you'd have to get into kind of how you use flash in photography, which obviously is a creative choice. The way of thinking about flash is not to just light up an entire scene. You wouldn't turn on one of these lights in order just to light up an entire street that you're trying to take a photo of at night. It's about creatively putting light in some places and not others. So if you're taking a really nice portrait of a person, you want the light to fall artfully across their face. Whereas a phone in normal mode will try and expose the whole scene. It'll try and balance the highlights. It will try and raise those shadows up. So a phone cannot take the sort of shots that you can get when you're working with professional flash in this way. I mean, the iPhone, Apple tried to create their what they call the portrait lighting, where it tries to digitally create similar effects that you might get in studio, and it doesn't really work. On the odd occasion it might look okay, but now you can actually just take those sort of shots for real using actual pro lighting.
I would say that at this point it's worth people just looking up the URL in the MP3 file description here, or going to uktechshow.com, finding episode 215 and finding the link in there to Andy's CNET article, or just Google Profoto B10 Flash Air X app CNET
or just Google Profoto CNET Hoyle. That'll do.
Okay. Because I think it's worth just having on your screen some of the example photos that Andy published, because if you were to look at them as I am doing at a glance, sort of half the size of your screen, nobody would say, oh well, that was taken on a mobile phone. They've been edited in Lightroom Mobile. They have been shot in a studio setting in a lot of cases. But the fact is, they look and indeed are professional studio photographs. There's some self-portraits in here. There's some outdoor creative stuff.
Even the ones on location, I can. Every shot that's on this article, I can say with full confidence that it would be impossible to get the same effect with just the phone. It has completely changed how I've been able to take photos with my phone. It is amazing. And I don't want to plug my own YouTube channel too much, but I've just done a I do have a YouTube photography channel, Andrew Langston Photography on YouTube. And I've just done a video on how I would take portraits, like moody one light black and white portraits. And while the ones in the video I did take with a regular camera, they are no different to the shots that I could have taken with my iPhone. And indeed, the shots, very, very similar style shots in the article that I took on my phone. And Nate, you've seen both. Mm. You cannot tell the difference between the images, because those images rely on the lighting. The camera is irrelevant. It's all about how you use and control lighting, using modifiers to get a really nice soft light, how you shape that light. And you cannot shape natural light in the same way with a phone, because a phone will try and balance certain things in different ways, which is why you also couldn't get these shots using LED lights, obviously, which are continuous lights. So you could use LED lights with a phone, but you could not get the same results. This is in every sense of the word a revolution in how you would take photos with an iPhone.
Amazing. I mean, as I say, everyone should pull up the link that's in the description of this episode and just have a quick look at these pictures, just so you can see what Andy's talking about here, because it is quite remarkable. And I think, although this product is in the realms of professionals, or certainly prosumers, it's also the kind of product that tends to find itself trickling down to consumer level eventually, if the demand is there, because the technology is not necessarily revolutionary from what I understand. It's more that the execution is so good that it's just better than anything else you can get. But if this is the sort of thing that could be available for a third of this cost, and maybe not quite as good but still better than the alternative, then this could be a very interesting industry development, particularly as more and more people just use the phone on their cameras regardless, which I think is certainly very exciting. Andy, thanks very much for talking about this. We'll include the links, as we've said several times, in the show notes, but do go and have a look at Andy's story for this. The pictures they're very pretty.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UKTech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
Got a little bit of feedback here I wanted to refer to. This came in from Rupert, who complimented Ian's knowledge about TVs on last week's episode. He said it was a very interesting piece when we were talking about the growing size of TVs in general, but the shrinking size of people's purchases of them over recent months. And Rupert continues, the reason CRTs generally maxed out at 32 inches is they were so damn heavy, especially when the trend went to flat screen, as this required so much more glass at the front to maintain the structure, given that there was a vacuum inside. Rupert also says, you asked for feedback on cassette tapes. Yes, I still use them, mainly in my 30-year-old car. Parenthetically, he says, fun car, I should add. I'm not that cheap. The issue with players is that the sprockets are driven by rubber belts and they can degrade or perish over time, which is not something I've had to consider before now for quite a long time. So thank you, Rupert, for that insult. Any other cassette fans, always welcome your feedback. Now, if you're listening to the free version of our show, then you may want to check out our Patreon membership this month if you're interested in going behind the scenes of what it is like to be a consumer or business journalist hearing the news that CES is going to be an online-only show next year. Andy and I talked a lot about that on the extended version of this show.
It was great fun, wasn't it, Nate?
It was both fun and, I think, deeply informative. And well worth listening to. So if you want to go inside, behind the scenes, on how those sorts of shows are going to change the jobs that Andy and I do, then do check us out, patreon.com/UKTech, where you can get that. Let's check in, I think it's probably about time, with Tom Merritt on Daily Tech News Show and find out what's been going on in the wider world of tech. I'm sorry, I sort of slipped into a bit of German there. That was unintentional, and I apologize. Sorry.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, we talked about the four major tech CEOs testifying to the U.S. Congress and why that may have been theater, but the investigation is real. We look at whether it will lead to fines, breakups, or new laws. We talked with Andy Anatko about the tech being used to make sports in empty arenas and stadiums feel more normal. Andrew Main helped us understand the state of AI, and Lamar Wilson talked with us about the confusing nature of TikTok, both wildly popular and feared as a tool of Chinese hegemony. All that and much more at dailytechnewsshow.com.
Well worth listening to the section on TikTok in particular if you're interested in what the hell is going on. I have still not used TikTok. I don't understand it. I find it terrifying. Andy, have you used TikTok?
No.
Great comments there. For more insight from Andy, like that one just then. check out dailytechnewsshow.com, obviously.
I could go on a rant is the problem.
All right. Well, if you want global tech insight, go to dailytechnewsshow.com. If you want UK nostalgia, keep coming to text message. What should people come to you for, Andy Hoyle, cnet.com?
They could come to me for various things. You can find me on CNET. Obviously, CNET is the home of technology news and reviews, so go there for all your tech needs. If you want to come and see anything I'm up to specifically, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter with @batteryhq. And as I mentioned earlier, I also have my own YouTube channel where I show all the behind the scenes on how I take a lot of my photos, both personally and professionally. You can find that by going on YouTube and looking for Andrew Langson Photography.
Yeah, I strongly recommend that, actually. I've been learning a lot about editing in particular from Andy's, from his streams and some of his live streams. And I really enjoyed a few weeks ago, you did kind of a Dungeons & Dragons-esque editing where you made photo edits based on the rolling of dice in order to choose the number on sliders and things while editing. And I thought the results for that were a lot of fun. It's well worth having a view of that. So what's that? Andrew Langson Photography.
It was a bit daft. Andrew Langson Photography, you will find. I mean, there's not many Langsons on YouTube, I imagine. So if you search Langson, I'm sure you'll just find you and me.
Pretty much.
In fact, let's have a look. Let's have a look now. We can do this live YouTube, and I'm just going to pop in Langson.
I have absolutely no interest in this.
What comes up? Oh, I'm top. Andrew Langson Photography with almost 3,000 subscribers. And below that, Nate Langson with
Have you got a podcast that's quite successful? Oh dear, you haven't.
Not anymore.
No, never mind. What a shame.
No, I don't.
Never mind. Well, choose your brother. It's either Andy or me, whatever you want to do. The choice, like with so many things in life, is predominantly yours. Goodbye, everybody.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.